Hey folks, this is Carrie Arentakai reading Keep Track of Losing Days by Drafter, Chapter 8, Flying Solo. I am reading this directly after Chapter 7. It seems like we'll be doubling up on chapters. I have no patience, nor do the people that are listening, which I appreciate very much. Okay. Author's notes, content warning for this chapter, guns. That reader's note, that makes me very nervous. Not as a content thing, but just as a what that portends for the plot. Okay. Wang Ji walks back to his seat at the back of the diner, reeling. His heart is numb with anger and cold shock. He can't feel his face. After a moment, he realizes that his mouth is hanging open slightly. He closes it with a dry sandpaper swallow. "Well, that was unexpected," Jiang says as Wang Ji thumps back into the seat across from him. He's attempting to look composed, but Wang Ji can see how relieved he is. It would be a little sweet if it weren't so maddening. Wei Ying had appeared as if from nowhere, looking like death, had given them almost zero information about what had happened to him, and had disappeared as quickly as he'd come, leaving them with no way not the best moment for me to get hiccups. Still leaving them with no way to contact him. Unexpected was one way to put it. "What did you say to him just now?" Jiang asks.
"Stop looking for me, Lantan."
"I was trying to find out where he was going." Jiang huffs irritably. "I don't suppose he told you."
"No," Wang Ji admits. "But I saw him get into a car with Wen Julio. I think that guy Shui Yang was driving."
"Wait, what? Really?" Jiang asks, the relief on his face finally starting to give way to alarm.
"What the fuck?"
Jiang groans, running a hand through his hair like he's thinking of pulling it out. "Why the fuck can't he ever do anything normal?" Quick reader's break. Is he, like, really complaining that Wei Ying is not doing a normal being abducted? Because that feels unfair to Wei Ying. Okay. Although it's kind of funny. All right. "I think he might still be in trouble." Wang Ji is sure of it, actually. But men like Jiang respond better to suggestions than to declarative statements.
"Yeah, no shit," Jiang snorts. "I just don't know what the fuck we're supposed to do about it."
"Why would he get into a car with the Wens?" Jiang throws up his hands. "Fuck if I know. Fuck if I know anything about what's going on with him, apparently. If something was wrong, why didn't he say anything while he was here? And if something's not wrong..."
He trails off, clenching his jaw, and looks away from Wang Ji.
A suspicious look settles over his face. Wang Ji can almost hear Jiang's train of thought, even though he stopped speaking aloud. If Wei Ying had gotten into the car with the Wens voluntarily, it would probably mean that he's been involved in some illegal activity. If that's the case, as far as Jiang is concerned, the less Wang Ji or anyone else at the SPD knows about it, the better. Going to jail the first time had destroyed Wei Ying's life. Going back would be even worse. Jiang stands and begins gathering his belongings, avoiding Wang Ji's eyes.
"I appreciate the extra care you've taken with this case, Lan. You and Ye both. Since it seems like my brother is officially no longer a missing person, this is a matter that should be handled within my family. I won't bother you anymore with it."
He holds out a hand for Wang Ji to shake. Wang Ji gets to his feet as well, shaking his hand through sheer force of habit.
"So now Wei Ying is family," he thinks. "What about Wen Ying?" he asks, starting to feel a little desperate. "Hell, maybe he really does have pneumonia. Hard to open a case to investigate when nobody's reported him missing."
He moves briskly towards the door. Wang Ji trails after him, at a loss for words. Outside, Jiang claps him on the shoulder.
"Thanks again for looking so hard for my brother. I'm sorry to have dragged you into all of this."
Wang Ji just stares at him.
"We still don't know where Wei Wuxian has been, or even where he is now."
"No," Jiang says, "but we know he's alive. The rest of it..." He shakes his head, pressing his lips together.
"The rest of it is no longer police business. If you'll excuse me, I should call my sister. See you on Monday, Lan."
He strides off, already pulling his phone out of his pocket.
Wangji can't help feeling like there's something he could do, some words he could say right now to get him back on Wangji's side. Jiang's brother is still in danger, after all, and Wangji really doesn't want to do this alone. But he has no idea what those words would be. As far as Jiang Wenyan knows, he's right not to trust Wangji. Getting mixed up in the Wens' web of criminal activities would be a disaster for Wei Ying, and he can certainly empathize with Jiang Wenyan's desire to keep Wei Ying out of trouble and out of jail. Unfortunately for Wangji, Jiang is right. There's no case anymore, now that they've both seen Wei Ying and confirmed that he's alive. He can imagine Yao saying, "It's not illegal for the guy to ride in a car with scumbags, Lan. Close the case." 1 5-minute encounter has managed to remove Wangji's last ally, along with any remaining hope that the SPD would have his back with this investigation. Even the manner in which they'd learned this information feels suspect to Wangji. Are they really supposed to believe that Wei Ying just happened to be walking by and saw them seated in the very back of a restaurant? Wangji pulls out his phone, intending to call Si Chen and check in on Ye Mingzhui. His thumb is hovering over his brother's name in his contact list, his mind still playing and replaying the conversation with Wei Ying, when something clicks into place. How did Wei Ying, or the Wens, or the Jins, or whoever, know he was meeting Jiang here? It's not like the diner is a regular dinner spot for either of them. He's eaten here a few times, but not in months. And as far as he knows, Jiang's never been there before. There's no reason anyone would assume that's where he and Jiang would be. Could Wangji be being followed? He has to assume that the answer is no, since he was able to break into Jin Corps and leave without being apprehended or impeded. Jiang, then? It's a possibility, especially since the encounter with Wei Ying seemed more designed to set his brother's mind at ease than to get Wangji off the case. Of course, there's another possibility. Slowly, Wangji relocks his phone and puts it back in his pocket. Meng Yao has a key to his apartment. He's known since Thursday night that Wangji is one of the investigators on the case. He would have had several opportunities to bug or hack Wangji's phone. With the right equipment, all it would take was close enough proximity to the phone while it was unlocked to clone the entire thing, which would certainly give Meng Yao access to Wangji's texts and call history, not to mention his phone's GPS. At the convenience store across the street from the diner, he buys a burner phone and loads it with minutes. He uses the ATM and takes out a couple $100s in cash while he's at it. Back in his car, he saves Si Chen's number in the burner phone's contacts, along with Nie Huaisang's and Ye Mingzhui's. After a moment, he shrugs and adds Jiang Wenyan's as well. Si Chen isn't picking up, perhaps unsurprisingly given the unfamiliar number Wangji's calling from. "Please answer," Wangji texts him from his own phone, then dials him again from the burner phone. "Wangji?" Si Chen asks when he picks up. "Where are you? What is this number?" "How's it going?" Wangji asks, choosing to ignore the question altogether. "Going pretty well. They're discharging Mingzhui soon. I'm going to go back to the condo with them, help him get settled, and then I think Nie Huaisang wanted to order takeout and maybe watch a movie or something." "Thank you, Nie Huaisang," Wangji thinks. "Great," he says. "I already ate. You should hang out there tonight. I'm sure Nie Mingzhui would be glad of your company."
"Okay, I think I will," Si Chen says brightly. "You planning to come by later, or do you need to work?"
"I need to work. He thinks carefully about what he wants to say, knowing that someone could be listening. He's not using his own phone, but Meng Yao seems like the kind of person who might bug his boyfriend's phone just as a matter of course, if he's in the habit of bugging phones. "I won't have my phone on me tonight, so don't expect to hear from me. If you need me, text me at this number, but I may not be able to answer."
"All right. Have a good night. Be safe."
Si Chen's voice is affectionate, warm. It sounds like home. It makes Wangji long for his childhood, when it seemed like his big brother always knew the right thing to do. Wangji swallows. He wants to say, "Stay away from Meng Yao." He wants to say, "I'm sorry." He wants to say, "I love you." But he can't risk alarming Si Chen, especially when doing so might alert Meng Yao. "You be safe too," he says and hangs up. He has no partner, no backup, no case. All he has is the burning knowledge that Wei Ying is alive. He knows what he has to do. Scene break. I've mentioned this before, but I love Si Chen
as kind of a dummy. and in this fic, right, he's a university professor and also kind of dumb about some things. And I maybe over-relate, but I have to say, this is pushing it, man. He's just calling from a random number that Si-Chen has never seen before. And he's like, I will be busy tonight. I may not be able to be in contact. And Si-Chen's like, okay, have fun. Oh, boy. Anyway, it's convenient for Wang Ji in this case. I hope he just gets to have a fun movie night with nothing traumatizing happening to him. I say with my Si-Chen-like optimism. Okay. He drives home and parks his car in his usual spot. He locks his phone in the glove compartment, sliding the burner phone into his pocket. He does not go inside. He looks up at the roof of the building as he walks past and imagines that he can see Wei Ying perched up there, cloaked in shadow, whiskey bottle in hand. Wei Ying is alive, he thinks. Without his phone, he can't order a lift. He walks down the arterial in the general direction of downtown, keeping an eye out for a cab to hail. He's almost halfway there before he realizes he might as well just walk. It's not raining anymore, and he has some time to kill anyway. The city is moving from evening into nighttime. Shops are closing up. Restaurants are loud and crowded, with lines starting to spill out of the more popular places. Bars are getting noisier. In another couple of hours, Seattle nightlife will be in full swing. It's not a scene Wang Ji has much familiarity with, outside of a professional capacity. He doesn't drink, hates crowds, goes to bed early, and spends too much time dealing with drunk people at work to want to do so in his free time. He wonders if Wei Ying likes to go out on a Saturday night, and decides that he probably does when he can afford it. He can picture Wei Ying dancing all night, throwing his arms around his friends' shoulders, knocking back shots like they were water, sweaty and laughing and alive. Wei Ying is alive, he thinks again, and the hope hurts so much that it's hard to breathe. By the time he gets to Belltown, it's after 9, and the clubs are starting to open. Several different competing bass lines are pounding into the street. He passes groups of people talking, laughing, leaning on each other. Alone, his face carefully blank with a touch of ice, he might as well be invisible. We open at 9, Cheng Mei, Shui Yang, had said. Cover starts at 10. That means things won't start getting busy until 10 at the earliest. Wang Ji finds a wine bar a few blocks up, orders a cup of decaf and a slice of cake, and waits. He's good at waiting. Wang Ji walks past Nightless City carefully, on the other side of the street, his head down. The line's about 15 people deep. They're busy, but not slammed. The length of the line matters less than the fact of its forming, for Wang Ji's purposes. He's not planning on going in the front door anyway. He turns down a side street, then down an alley that stinks of beer and piss and garbage. He leans in the shadows and waits again, watching Nightless City's loading dock. A young woman comes out the back door and lights a cigarette, staring wearily into space. Wang Ji notes that she does not move the city-mandated 25 feet from the door before lighting up. Well, you know, Wang Ji, they're into organized crime. I'm assuming they're not following the restrictions, you know. Organizedly, there's probably a notice up in their lunchroom that they must not move far enough away from the entrance because they need to be doing crime at all times. Okay. Sorry, that is so cute. Wang Ji notes that she does not move the city-mandated 25 feet from the door before lighting up. From her dramatic makeup and leather bustier. Is it bustier? Bustier? Let's check. I'm just going with bustier. Okay. Wang Ji's guessing she's a bartender or a cocktail waitress, something front of house, which means she gets guys trying to talk her into things all night, every night. Not the target he's looking for. He waits. She goes back inside. He waits. Eventually, two young guys come out, chatting aimlessly in Mandarin. They sit on the edge of the loading dock, feet dangling off the edge, and light up a joint, passing it between them. They're wearing white aprons over casual street clothes. Not front of house, then. And since Nightless City doesn't exactly have a robust dinner menu, Wang Ji assumes they're bussers or dishwashers or the like. Not a glamorous, tip-forward job, and not the kind of job Wen Chao's flunkies would be lining up for. These guys are likely just regular employees. No mob ties, no larger loyalties.
Good evening, Wang Ji says in Mandarin, walking out of the shadows as if he's just arrived. The taller of the two dishwashers snorts out a cloud of smoke. Good evening, he says, mocking Wang Ji's formal tone. Smiling and being charming, putting people at ease, convincing them to break the rules, these are skills Wang Ji does not have, has never had. He's going to have to do this his way because there is no other way available to him. I was wondering if you'd let me in there, he says, indicating the kitchen door. He keeps his chin down and angled slightly away, hoping his hair will keep his face somewhat in shadow in the harsh overhead light, at least enough to obscure his features on the security camera aimed at the door. You don't want to pay the cover? The shorter guy asks, grinning at him. Wang Ji shakes his head. I don't care about the cover. I don't want to wait in the line. At this time of night, the line shouldn't be that long, the taller guy points out. There's someone inside, waiting, Wang Ji says. This is technically true. There are likely any number of people waiting inside, for drinks, or for the bathroom, or for the coat check. Wang Ji tries not to lie, in part because he's a terrible liar, but he's gotten very good over the years at saying little and letting people come to their own conclusions. The tall guy smirks. If you can't leave your girl alone in the club, maybe she shouldn't be your girl. Wang Ji reaches into his pocket. The cover is 20, right? Why don't we say 40? 20 for each of you? The dishwashers exchange a look. 10 minutes and $50 later, Wang Ji is standing in Nightless City's busy, steam-filled kitchen. No bouncers to check his ID and possibly recognize his name from a no-entry list. No Wen henchman who might recognize his face and call the boss. Most importantly, no metal detector, which means nobody's seen his badge and he still has his gun, hidden at the small of his back, his untucked shirt pulled over it. He moves towards the door to the main area of the club, waiting until the last moment to duck into the stairwell leading up to Wen Chao's office instead. Silently, his back to the wall, he slides up the stairs, keeping to the shadows as much as possible. It's Saturday night, and Wen Chao had not struck Wang Ji as the type of person who works on Saturday night. Wen Chao was more likely to be in the VIP area of the club or doing something else entirely than he is to be working in his office. Hoffman had said that Wen Julio rarely left Wen Chao's side, which means that Wen Chao had almost certainly been the one to send him with Wei Ying to the diner tonight. Wen Chao knows where Wei Ying is. His stupid Bond villain lair of an office is the most likely place to find that information. No light spills out from underneath the door. Wang Ji's hypothesis about Wen Chao's Saturday night plans appears to have been correct, but it's locked, of course. Wang Ji supposes it would have been too much to hope that it wouldn't be. He glances back down the stairwell, which is dark and empty behind him, lit only by the light filtering in from the kitchen. He can hear the clatter of dishes and glassware, and beyond it, the thump of bass from the dance floor. Nobody seems to have noticed him slipping up here. There are no security cameras in the stairwell. Wen Chao probably doesn't want a record of who might go in and out of his office. Wang Ji reaches into his pocket, where he still has the disassembled pen and bent-out paperclip he'd used to break into Meng Yao's filing cabinet that afternoon. That was today, he thinks to himself, for the second time in 2 days, and tries not to feel like he's aged a decade since Thursday morning. He'd put them in his pocket mostly because he hadn't known what else to do with them at the time, but he's glad he hasn't come to this door completely empty-handed. He sinks to one knee and starts to work the lock. This lock is sturdier and more complicated than the one on the filing cabinet had been. The plastic inner core of the pen bends and flexes within the lock's inner workings, and Wang Ji has to be careful not to break it. It's dark in the stairwell, and every sound from the kitchen has him glancing down the stairs with his heart in his throat. His back and knees start to ache from kneeling hunched around the lock. Finally, he can start to feel the tumblers inside start to move. Hope sparking within him, he redoubles his efforts. He thinks he's close. He can feel things beginning to click into place when the door is flung open from within. He almost overbalances, falling inward towards the door. When he pulls himself upright, gasping in surprise, he looks up into the barrel of a gun pointed at his forehead. Get up, Wen Julio says, his face expressionless, his hands steady around the gun stock. Awash in cold fear, Wang Ji holds his hands out away from his body. He stands up slowly, keeping his eyes on the weapon. Wen Julio tracks his motion with the gun's barrel, keeping it aimed directly at Wang Ji's face as Wang Ji rises to his feet.
After the initial jolt of surprise, Wang Ji's heart seems to drop back into his chest in slow motion. The breath he draws into his lungs feels hyper-oxygenated, his vision sharpening into a startling clarity. With the office door open, he can see that there is, in fact, a light on inside, a single reading lamp, too dim for him to have seen around the cracks in the door jamb. The gun is a Sig Sauer, the P226, or maybe the P220. It's hard to tell in the dim light. Reader's note, I do not know what the common terms for guns are. I'm sorry. Maybe there is a convention to how to say these things, but I do not know it. Okay. Wen Julio's weight is evenly distributed over his feet. His shoulders dropped low and pointed squarely at Wang Ji. He knows how to handle the gun, clearly. Not that it matters with a .40 caliber at this range, where he could take Wang Ji's head off without even trying. Let's talk about this, Wang Ji says, with no real idea of what he's going to say next. Wen Julio doesn't reply. One of Wen Chao's other minions appears at Wen Julio's shoulder from inside the office, speaking quietly into a cell phone. If Wang Ji is getting out of this, it has to be now, before reinforcements arrive. Listen, he tries again, taking a step backwards. He holds his hands out in front of him, as though to placate the looming enforcer, a gesture that also takes his hands closer to his own waist, his own gun. Hands, Wen Julio snaps, not taking his eyes or his gun off of Wang Ji's face. Stomach sinking, Wang Ji raises his hands back in the air. On your head, Wen Julio prompts him. Wang Ji complies, setting his hands on the back of his head, trying to keep his breathing steady. The light coming up the stairwell dims, and Wang Ji knows he's missed his chance. Two more men are making their way up the stairs, guns drawn, a third staying below to block the doorway. One stops at the top of the stairs, training his gun on Wang Ji. This guy seems a little nervous, a little less assured of his weapon, which would be to Wang Ji's advantage if he was more than 3 feet away, but right now just increases the likelihood that the guy will shoot him accidentally. The other guy moves behind Wang Ji and starts to search him. Wang Ji keeps his hands on his head, cursing inwardly, as the guy pats down his arms, his sides. The searcher makes an interested sound when he finds the folded cash in Wang Ji's front pocket, and slips it into his own pocket. He hands the burner phone over Wen Julio's shoulder to the man behind him, who's still on the phone. He makes another interested sound when he finds Wang Ji's gun, which he unceremoniously strips, handing the pieces back to the guy in the office as well, along with Wang Ji's badge. He pats down Wang Ji's legs, and, search completed, grabs Wang Ji's wrists and wrestles them behind his back, twisting his right arm up hard enough that pain flares up through Wang Ji's shoulder. Wang Ji feels oddly calm about the fact that he's about to die. He's aware that his heart is jackrabbiting with panic, but it feels removed from him somehow, laid over with a deep, crystalline serenity. He thinks distantly that if the guy behind him doesn't move, he's going to get blood all over him. He wishes he could have found Wei Ying. The guy who's been on the phone hangs up the call, moving around Wen Julio into the narrow hallway. In doing so, he partially obstructs the guy on the stairs' line of sight. Wang Ji watches out of the corner of his eye as the second gunman lowers his weapon so as not to be aiming directly at his compatriot. Don't kill him, says the guy with the cell phone. I don't mind killing a cop, Wen Julio says, in the same tone of voice someone might say, I don't mind tomato on my sandwich. Cell phone guy shrugs. He said, don't kill him. Really? Wen Julio turns to look at cell phone guy, taking his eyes off of Wang Ji for the first time. The gun barrel drifts a centimeter or so to the right as he turns his head. It's not much of a chance, but it's the only one Wang Ji's going to get. Wang Ji slams his heel down with all his weight onto the foot of the man holding his arms. The guy howls and loosens his grip, enough for Wang Ji to drive an elbow back and up into his solar plexus. The breath is knocked out of the man with a sick coughing sound. Wang Ji throws himself forward, intending to knock his shoulder into Wen Julio's hands and get the gun pointed at the ceiling, hoping to wrest it from his grasp. Instead, Wen Julio smoothly sidesteps him, reaching out with one catcher's mitt-sized hand to grab Wang Ji by the throat and slam him into the wall. Wang Ji's head rebounds off the wall with a sickening crack that makes him see stars for a moment. Detective Lan, Wen Julio says dispassionately. He presses the gun into Wang Ji's shoulder, angling it up and away from Wang Ji's face such that a bullet would shatter his shoulder rather than his skull. Be smart. There's nothing to say to that. Wang Ji slumps slightly against the wall, breathing hard. What do we do with him?
the guy on the stairs asks. Wenjilio looks at Wang Ji, considering. Put him downstairs for now. Wang Ji's arms are seized and wrenched behind him once more. They half march, half drag him down the stairs, Wenjilio following behind them with a gun pressed to Wang Ji's ribs. In the kitchen, no one so much as glances at them. He wonders how much time the employees of Nightless City must spend looking the other way while people are marched past them at gunpoint. Next to the stairway going up to the office, there's another stairway leading down. They manhandle him down the stairs and into a long hallway, dragging him past a storeroom full of kegs and an open closet crammed with dusty janitorial supplies, coming to a stop at a reinforced steel door. The door is shiny and new, incongruous in the dank, dingy basement. Wenjilio pulls out a ring of keys and unlocks it. They shove Wang Ji through the door and slam it behind him. Quick reader's note. You know, I understand Wang Ji running in, you know, understanding it was a foolhardy thing to do, but feeling like he needed to. I don't understand why he didn't tell anybody where he was going. Okay. He stumbles a few steps into the room, which is smallish and almost entirely empty. An army surplus cot is shoved into one corner. The only other thing in the room is a large desk covered with computer equipment. Standing in front of the desk, where he's clearly just leaped out of his chair, is a white-faced Wei Ying. They stare at each other for a moment, both too stunned to speak. Wei Ying is wearing his red Twin Heroes t-shirt. The Wens must have provided him with the shirt he was wearing at the diner earlier, so he wasn't wearing the exact same clothes he'd been wearing when he disappeared for his conversation with Wang Ji and Jiang Wenyin. He's bruised and haggard, just like he'd been this afternoon. But he's there, breathing and beautiful, and just a few feet away. Wang Ji's been thinking for days about what he wants to say to Wei Ying when he sees him again. But now he finds he can't speak at all. Can't even move, can't reach out and touch Wei Ying like every fiber of his being is longing to do. He can only stare, his eyes greedily drinking in every detail. Wei Ying's nails are chipped and bitten down to the quick. His lips are dry and cracked. The hole in the neck of his t-shirt has gotten bigger, revealing a heartbreaking glimpse of his collarbone. His eyes are wide and bloodshot, gazing at Wang Ji with the same surprise with which Wang Ji is gazing back at him. Wei Ying recovers first. "What the fuck are you doing here?" he rasps. Wang Ji exhales slowly. Sorry. There's a siren in the background, which does feel atmospheric, but I hope you can't hear it. Wang Ji exhales slowly. The adrenaline is starting to bleed out of his system, leaving him feeling shaky and drained. "Looking for you," he says. "Lan Zhan." Wei Ying rubs his hands over his eyes, his face clearly frustrated. "Nope." Wei Ying rubs his hands over his eyes, his face, clearly frustrated. "I told you not to do that." Wang Ji shrugs. They size each other up for a moment. Slowly, carefully, the way one might approach a wild animal, Wang Ji begins to walk toward Wei Ying, who eyes him mistrustfully, but lets him approach. Wang Ji stops right in front of him, just a breath away, close enough to feel the warmth of his body. Up close, Wang Ji can see that Wei Ying is tense, practically humming with it, his breathing a little frantic, his eyes darting to Wang Ji and away again. With that same slow, deliberate movement, giving Wei Ying plenty of time to pull away, Wang Ji reaches up and touches Wei Ying's face. A tremor runs through Wei Ying at the contact, but he lets Wang Ji gently turn his head, angling his bruised cheekbone up toward the light. The point of impact is still a deep purplish red, but the way it's fading out around the edges and the lack of swelling indicate there's no deeper damage to the bone underneath. His split lip is mostly healed. Wang Ji's guessing that both injuries were part of the initial kidnapping and not signs of ongoing abuse, which is good. Wang Ji's hand is still on Wei Ying's face, and he wants rather desperately to kiss him, to wrap him in his arms and never let go, but Wei Ying is looking way too freaked out for anything like that. He drops his hand slowly, reaching down to take Wei Ying's wrist. Unresisting, Wei Ying lets Wang Ji lift his hand, turning it over to examine the burns on his forearm. There are 5 in total. 2 have faded to a red-brown and begun to flake, probably 5 or 6 days old. The other 3 are fresher, a blistered, angry red. Wang Ji softly runs a finger down Wei Ying's arm alongside the burns, taking care not to touch the injured skin.
Wei Ying trembles again, just slightly.
They hurt you, Wang Ji says. He does not add, I'll kill them, but it's definitely implied.
Wei Ying pulls his hand away, takes a small step back.
I've been hurt worse, he says, tucking his arm behind himself. It's not that big a deal. For the first time, Wang Ji really looks around them. They're in a windowless storage room, marks on the floor and walls indicating the places where, until recently, shelves must have stood. He thinks about the piles of boxes and supplies in Wen Chao's office, the stacks of paper towels and industrial-sized bottles of dish soap, and kicks himself for not wondering more about why they were being stored there. A door at one end of the room is ajar, leading to a small, dingy toilet cubicle. The cot, the desk, the chair, and the computer are the only furniture in the room. A security camera is bolted to one corner of the ceiling. The room is small enough that the camera could easily capture everything in it. He can hear the distant thump of music from the busy nightclub above. Wang Ji gestures towards the camera.
Can they hear us?
No, Wei Ying shakes his head. Video only, as far as I can tell. Not like I've been having a ton of scintillating conversations down here by myself.
That's good.
It isn't good, exactly, but at least it's something.
Where is Wen Ying?
I don't know, Wei Ying says, his mouth twisting with anger. Wang Ji sits down on the edge of the cot, feeling a deep weariness tugging at the edges of his mind.
Tell me what's going on.
Wei Ying sinks down into the computer chair. He swivels it back and forth a few times, head resting in his hand, looking worn down and a little truculent.
You might as well tell me, Wang Ji points out. I'm here now.
How much do you already know? Wei Ying asks, blowing a wisp of hair out of his face.
I know you had a conversation with Shui Yang at a party a few weeks ago, and he offered you some sort of project, which you turned down. I know the Wens are working with Jean Corps to sell illegal goods and launder the money. I assume the project is related. I know Wen Ying disappeared around the same time you did, but nobody reported him missing, and I know his sister is actively covering that up for some reason.
Wow, you know a lot, Wei Ying says with an ironic little smile. You should be a detective.
Wang Ji lifts an eyebrow at him.
Wei Ying sighs. How familiar are you with the dark web?
Not very.
Okay, well, Wei Ying sits forward, resting his elbows on his knees, the spark coming back into his eyes a little, like it always does when he's talking about something that interests him. The main thing about a dark website is that it can't be accessed via links from other websites, or even from a regular browser like Chrome. You have to have the address to access it, but even with the address, a regular browser would just display a blank page.
Wang Ji nods.
That much, at least, he knows. With a regular web page, you tell your browser what page you want to access. The browser asks the server for the page, and then it returns to you. Simple. To access a page on the dark web, you need to use something called onion browsing. Basically, instead of going directly to the server, you use a tool like Tor, which routes you through a series of nodes. The request is wrapped in multiple layers of encryption, and between each layer is the location of the next node. So node A decrypts a layer and sees that the request needs to be sent to node B, then node B decrypts the next layer and sees that the request needs to be sent to node C, and so on and so on. Wei Ying mimics the journey with his eloquent hands. Then, when the request gets to the actual server, the server returns the requested page through a new series of nodes. So the server only knows that the request came from node E or whatever, and you only know that the page was returned from node A. The intermediate steps are disguised.
Okay, Wang Ji says, not sure where this is going.
So this means that Tor is a lot slower than just, like, the normal internet because of all the extra steps involved. There's a ton of stuff like streaming video that just straight up won't work on the dark web. And any kind of advanced functionality, you have to weigh against how long it would take to load. As a result, most of the dark web looks like shit, and it's frustrating to use. It's like a bunch of sites that look like GeoCities pages from the mid-90s. Wei Ying scoffs. Search engines on dark web markets are borderline useless because modern search algorithms are too complex. Actually, buying stuff can be a gigantic pain in the ass. The dark web is not, like, a pleasant browsing experience.
Wangji is starting to put the pieces together. The Wens are building a dark web marketplace. Actually, I'm pretty sure that the Jins are the one building the dark web marketplace. The Wens are just helping them stock it. But yeah. Wei Ying slumps back in the computer chair. This site? It's everything. Guns, drugs, passports, credit card numbers. It's like Silk Road turned up to 11. I don't know what that means, Wangji confesses. Wei Ying snorts. Lan Chan. No, I suppose you wouldn't. He smiles, shaking his head. And Wangji loves him. Loves him. And if Wangji has to die in this basement, at least he's seen that smile one more time. Wei Ying looks back at him, a softness in his eyes, in the lines of his mouth. What? Wangji asks, when the moment stretches out too long. Nothing. It's just... Wei Ying shakes his head again. It's nice to see you. You too. This is an understatement, but it's all Wangji can manage without leaping across the room and crushing his mouth onto Wei Ying's. So it's going to have to do for now. He clears his throat. So, what does any of this have to do with you? Wei Ying looks away from him, down at his feet. I wrote this programming language, he says to the floor. It's super lightweight. It's designed to be fast, but still enable websites to incorporate some more sophisticated design elements and functionality. I've used it to build dark websites before. Not for anything legal, he says hastily, glancing up at Wangji, like Wangji cares even the tiniest amount about that right now. Just for, like, some community organizing stuff. Abortion clinic escort services. Abortion clinic escort resources, that kind of thing. You don't have to explain yourself to me, Wangji says gently. Lan Chan. Wei Ying laughs. A tired laugh, but a real one. You can't just say things like that to me. He rubs his eyes. Sorry, I forgot what I was saying. You mentioned this coding language to Shui Yang, Wangji prompts him. Wei Ying rolls his eyes. Ugh, that fucking guy. Wangji concurs. So? Wei Ying fidgets impatiently. I'm a good friend, okay? Like, if my friend wants to break up with a super nice dude he's been practically married to for almost a decade and rebound with him with some hot, scary edgelord, I celebrate his life choices. Wangji's not familiar with the term edgelord, but it does seem an apt descriptor for Shui Yang. I figure if that's the crazy train Xiao Xingchen wants to be on, the best thing I can do is get on board because I am a good friend, Wei Ying continues, pointing a finger for emphasis. You are. Lan Chan, Wei Ying whines with a teasing grin. Stop saying nice things to me. My delicate constitution can't handle it. Wangji allows himself a tiny smile of self-satisfaction. Wei Ying is going to have to get used to it. Anyway, sorry, it's taking me forever to tell you this. Wangji indicates the bare, empty room they're imprisoned in with an ironic eyebrow. Right, Wei Ying chuckles. Not like we have anything better to do. Pass out from exhaustion is starting to look like a viable alternative activity to Wangji, but he needs to know what they're up against. Go on. So, because, as you correctly point out, I am such a nice and charming and handsome and loyal friend, and because I was supremely plastered at the time, I ended up talking to this guy Shui Yang for like half an hour at this party because it seemed like Xiao Xingchen maybe needed a little break from the guy. Wangji thinks of Xiao Xingchen's wide, frightened eyes, the way his hands had shaken when they brought up Shui Yang. He told me he was a bartender. I don't even know what all I talked to him about. Like I said, I was shit-faced. But apparently I talked a big game about my dark web programming skills, and apparently Shui Yang passed that information on to Wen Chao. Because the next thing I know, the two of them are blowing up my phone, trying to get me to build this fucking website for them. Wei Ying folds his arms. Like I'm stupid enough to build them the fucking Amazon of illegal shit in a programming language I wrote that only I know, especially... He trails off, kicking fretfully at the leg of his chair, frowning at the floor. Especially given your criminal record. Wangji finishes for him. Wei Ying glances up at him, looking wary and vulnerable and suddenly impossibly young. In Wei Ying's face, Wangji can see the 18-year-old boy whose life shattered around him, and Wangji grieves for that boy. Wei Ying drops his eyes back to the floor. You know about that, huh? He asks quietly. Wangji keeps his voice equally quiet.
I do. Lan-chan, you were young, Wang Ji says firmly. And from what I understand, it wasn't your fault. Wei Ying smiles a bitter little smile. It wasn't not my fault. Even so, you were not the only one to blame. You should not have been the only one to suffer for it. I'm sorry I didn't tell you, Wei Ying mumbles, still avoiding Wang Ji's eyes. Wang Ji reaches across the small space and takes Wei Ying's hand, giving it a little squeeze. There is no need for apologies between us. Wei Ying looks up at him again, his eyes enormous, astonished. Hesitantly, he wraps his fingers around Wang Ji's. A small, sweet smile slowly blooms on his face. Wang Ji squeezes his hand again, feeling an answering smile blooming on his own face. Mindful of the camera watching them both, he reluctantly lets go, sitting back. Please continue. Right, Wei Ying says, blinking. So, the Wens offered me a lot of money to build the site, but I didn't want to risk going back to jail. And even if I did, I didn't want to help them sell this kind of stuff. There's some fucked up stuff on here. Like, anybody who wants to buy a grenade launcher on the dark web should probably not have a grenade launcher. I figured they'd just find somebody else to build it. Not like Seattle has a shortage of web developers. He rubs his eyes again, and Wang Ji can see the bone-deep tiredness in every line of him. But then on Monday, I get this envelope in my locker at work. I thought it was just going to be another cash offer, but instead it was a picture of my roommate with a gun to his head holding that day's paper, like something out of a fucking movie, he spits bitterly. So I called them and said I'd do it, and they sent some guys to come pick me up, and they beat the shit out of me, which was fun, and I've been here ever since, working on this stupid fucking website, and that was, fuck, I don't even know what day it is. Wang Ji has to think about it for a minute. Saturday. Saturday? Wei Ying mutters to himself. Fuck. That's the other thing. They're starting to get pissed about how long it's taking. He glares at the ceiling, as though his eyes could pierce through multiple floors up to Wen Chao's office. Which, as I've repeatedly told them, is because this is not how anybody builds a website. Do you know how hard it is to build a website without access to the goddamn internet? I can imagine. Anything anybody builds is at least half somebody else's code. Normally, if I was building something like this, I'd have, like, Stack Overflow and GitHub and, like, fucking Google. I wouldn't be building the entire thing by hand by myself. So of course it's taking forever. At least it's almost done now, he sighs. He glances back at Wang Ji and gives him a sad, wry smile. If you could have just been slightly less good at your job for a couple of more days, this all would have been over. Wang Ji shrugs. He's not going to apologize for looking for Wei Ying. You must have been onto something for them to want me to put on that whole show for you today, Wei Ying says, eyeing him curiously. I found out about Jin Kor's involvement, Wang Ji says. Wei Ying gives a low smile. Nope. Wei Ying gives a low whistle. Well, that would do it. Your brother knows now, too. I still can't get over the two of you working together, Wei Ying chuckles. How did that go? He considers what he can say that wouldn't be a lie. Jiang Wenyan is a fine investigator, Wang Ji says judiciously, and he clearly cares about you very much. Yeah? Wei Ying asks with a self-deprecating little half-smile. He tell you that? Wang Ji cannot imagine Jiang Wenyan saying something like that to anyone. No, but it's obvious. He was beside himself looking for you. He watches Wei Ying hear him, and he watches Wei Ying not believe him, and it breaks his heart a little. Well, that's nice, Wei Ying says. I don't suppose he knows you're here? No, Wang Ji admits. Sorry. Loud people outside. And the last 24 hours are really starting to catch up with him now, his mind struggling against a heavy blanket of fatigue. No, he says again, laughing a little. Nobody knows I'm here. He yawns, his tongue feeling thick and cottony. Sorry. You're falling asleep, Lan-chan, Wei Ying observes fondly. I had a long day. A day that started with 4 hours sleep, and included getting yelled at by his boss, 2 separate instances of breaking and entering, walking across half the city, and having a gun shoved in his face, among other things. When he thinks about it, Wang Ji is a little amazed he's still conscious. You should get some sleep, Wei Ying says.
Go ahead and take the bed. I've fallen asleep in this chair plenty of times over the last week as it is. Wang Ji eyes the computer chair, which seems to have limited back support and no head support to speak of. Don't be absurd. Beat sleeping on the floor, Wei Ying points out, indicating the bare poured concrete beneath them. Kicking off his shoes, Wang Ji experimentally stretches out on the cot, which is long and narrow and definitely only built for one person. He rolls onto his side and wriggles backwards until his back is pressed against the cold stone wall. It's not particularly comfortable, but it does create enough space for a second person beside him on the cot, especially if that person is relatively slender and not too picky about personal space. Wei Ying is watching him with a closed and readable expression. There is room for both of us, Wang Ji announces, gesturing towards the space he's created. You don't have to do that, Lan Chan, really. I can take the chair, it's not a problem, Wei Ying assures him, eyebrows raised, sounding a little panicky. Wei Ying sits up. He's too tired to try to convince Wei Ying of anything. Coaxing has never been his strong suit to begin with. Very well. If you do not wish to share the bed, I will take the floor. He slides down to the floor, which is very hard and cold in a way that immediately begins to seep through his clothing and into his joints. He grabs the lone pillow off the bed without bothering to apologize for it. If Wei Ying is going to make Wang Ji sleep on the floor, giving up the pillow seems the least he can do, and starts to stretch out again. Wei Ying reaches out and catches his elbow before he can fully lie down. Lan Chan, get up off the floor. Don't be absurd, he adds, mimicking... I'll try that again. Don't be absurd, he adds, mimicking Wang Ji's tone and his words back to him. Take the bed. I'm fine in the chair. Wang Ji fixes him with a level stare, waiting, making no move to get up from the floor. Fine, you win, Wei Ying laughs. God, you're so fucking stubborn. We'll share, okay? Please get off the floor. Okay, Wang Ji says, allowing Wei Ying to pull him up by the elbow and deposit him back onto the cot. He can't help feeling a little smug about his victory as he presses his back against the wall, making space for Wei Ying once more. Don't gloat, Lan Chan. It's not becoming, Wei Ying scolds him, smiling. He walks over to the door and turns off the light, plunging the windowless room into darkness. Gradually, Wang Ji's eyes adjust. There's a faint illumination coming from the darkened computer screen, but otherwise the room is completely black. Even though there's nothing in the room for him to trip on, Wei Ying is still hesitant as he makes his way across the space. He stands beside the cot for a long moment. Wang Ji can hear him take a deep breath before sitting down on the edge of the cot and gingerly stretching out to lie down next to Wang Ji. They lie there, facing each other in the darkness, listening to the distant sounds of the music above them. Wang Ji realizes he's holding his body perfectly stiff in an effort not to encroach into Wei Ying's space. Wei Ying appears to be doing the same. After a minute or so, Wei Ying shifts around a bit in an effort to get comfortable and their knees bump together. Sorry, Wei Ying whispers, drawing back. This is ridiculous, Wang Ji thinks. They're never going to be able to get to sleep like this, and it seems silly to even try. Wang Ji knows that as soon as he does fall asleep, he's going to roll over onto his back, and they'll end up tangled up in each other anyway. There's no point in scrupulously maintaining this 2-inch-wide demilitarized zone between them until then. They're close friends, and Wang Ji's pretty sure that they're in love with each other. And he's weary and sore and has been holding back from touching Wei Ying from the moment he was shoved into this little room with him. And there no longer seems to be any compelling reason to do so. This is ridiculous, Wang Ji says out loud. Sliding his arms around Wei Ying's waist, he pulls him in close, until they're chest to chest, their legs tangling together. Wei Ying stays rigid in his arms for a moment, from surprise or uncertainty. Finally, he lets out a long, unsteady sigh, a breath Wang Ji hadn't even realized he'd been holding. The tension leaves him all at once, and he melts into Wang Ji, burying his face in Wang Ji's shoulder and inhaling him deeply. His hands slide up Wang Ji's back and pull him in closer, tighter. And Wang Ji realizes that Wei Ying is shaking. They stay like that for a long time, not speaking, Wei Ying clinging to Wang Ji's shoulders, Wang Ji smoothing one hand up and down Wei Ying's back. Wang Ji feels the shoulder of his shirt growing damp. He doesn't say anything, just holds Wei Ying close. Eventually, the shaking subsides, and Wei Ying starts to relax his hands from where they've been gripping the back of Wang Ji's shirt. Wang Ji keeps stroking Wei Ying's back, down the graceful dip of his spine, up over the two sharp bones of his shoulder blades. I missed you, Wei Ying murmurs. Wang Ji rolls onto his back, pulling Wei Ying with him until Wei Ying is half draped over him, an arm wrapped around Wang Ji's chest. Wei Ying snuggles into the junction of Wang Ji's neck and shoulder with a sigh. I missed you too, Wang Ji says. Wei Ying sighs again and tucks his face into Wang Ji's neck. Han Zhan, he says, his lips moving softly against Wang Ji's pulse point, heating the blood in Wang Ji's entire body with just that one gentle touch. I told you to stop looking for me. I'm not worth getting killed over. Tightening his arm around Wei Ying's shoulders, Wang Ji turns his head, pushing his nose into Wei Ying's hair. Wei Ying smells like stale sweat and exhaustion and fear. Yes, you are, he whispers fiercely against Wei Ying's forehead. Yes, you are. Of course you are. Unable to help himself, he presses a kiss against Wei Ying's hairline, and another, and another. He can feel Wei Ying smiling into his neck. Now, go to sleep, Wang Ji tells him. Good night, Lan Zhan. Good night. Author's end notes. This chapter is accompanied by donations to the Northwest Community Bail Fund and to Life After Hate. Have all 8 chapters of this fic been an extremely elaborate setup for a classic there was only one bed scenario? Yes. I'm so blown away by the response to this fic. Thank you to everyone who has commented, left kudos, recommended to your friends, shared, etc. I'm quite invested in this story and it means a lot to know that y'all are too. Thanks, as always, to Spoops and Eric Keisha for betaing. Coming next week in Chapter 9, Breakfast with Wen Chao, A Variety of Confessions. So end of chapter. I hope you guys are all interacting and commenting and leaving kudos for Drafter. I feel incredibly swept up into this story. And Drafter deserves to know that probably many of you are as well. It's bad that I feel like I have gotten a lot of resolution and release, even though they're both still kidnapped, but they're kidnapped together now. So that's good. I feel I can rest easy, at least knowing that they are cuddling while kidnapped. Goodness gracious. And it feels like the action part of the story is still very much happening, but the mystery part, which is often the part that gets me feeling not obliged, but motivated to keep going, is wrapped up a little bit, which is reasonable and good for my ability to go to sleep tonight, I think. So this was a delightful chapter to read. So much going on. I'm worried about Lan Xichen. And hopefully, yeah, I guess everything will resolve in the next 2 chapters. So thank you for listening, and I will be back tomorrow with another chapter. Bye.